Give me one second. I'm gonna turn on this nice little
The
Loom
cute.
Cube that you
Cute.
recommended I buy.
Look at what she's is light at this point. You know what? You're welcome.
Oh, God damn.
Your Loom Cube just died.
Yeah, it's not. I guess I should have charged this beforehand. Thanks a lot for the recommendation. That's how you can
God.
start it off. Just hate me as an asshole. The viewers will love it.
Welcome to Red Pill, Blue Pill, an open discussion podcast about all things film. We're your hosts, Kat.
And Fed, welcome back, guys, to episode 6 of RPVP. And today I'm actually really excited because I have a very close friend and fellow co-worker as a guest today. So our guest is Washise Cole, and here's a little bit of a background. So after graduating from UM Film School, Washise started his own video production company called UNS, and he's currently producing a coming-of-age TikTok series, you heard right, called Starts. And he also has a podcast called Arts with an X, where he produces meaningful and sometimes insane audio stories. So I've had the pleasure of working for and with him for the past year. So welcome, Wishies, to RPVP.
Thank you. I'm super excited to talk about myself. Quick correction for you, and it's not your fault, but the title of the TikTok series is in Dutch, so it's Strax.
Strax?
Yeah, that's how you pronounce it, like a European.
Oh, I read Starks like Tony Stark. I'm sorry, my favorite Avenger.
Also my favorite Avenger.
So what does Strax mean?
So it's Dutch for later. I have a tendency of naming things in different languages, like I did with one of my other shorts, Zindagi, which means life in Hindi, because those two words are boring in English.
Same with caminos. Path sounds so horrible. I had to do it in Spanish too, so I feel.
Yeah, because it's just spicier. The name just needs to sound right,
That's true.
more than what it means, at least for me. I mean, and not to say that the meaning is irrelevant, but I feel like it needs to sound right.
So before even writing your story, you gotta think, does my title sound interesting? And then you do the rest. So just a brief background. So we brought in Wishies today to really talk about a little bit something that's a little bit different when it comes to film, something that a lot of people maybe don't really see if they're not really in the industry. And what I'm talking about is the producing side, right? Into just understanding what needs to be done on a logistic standpoint and an organizational standpoint to make the artistic part of film come to life, right? So what she says is one of the best producers that I've worked with. So I thought it would be really interesting to bring him on to not only give us some insight about the producing side, but also teach us, things that we didn't learn in film school and bring back that vibe that we got from Camila's podcast that we got really, really good feedback on. So we were just like, let's just make part two of it and see what happens.
Yeah, and it's really fulfilling, to be honest, because the way you mentioned it, right? It is a lot of logistics, but we're the ones that get the options for the location, right? And
Yes.
that affects how it looks. That creates part of the atmosphere, right? So it is intermingled with the creative without the pressure. There are other pressures, right? The time pressure of figuring something out, but that one's fun.
How does one get into producing?
Oh, it was a journey, all right. So when I entered college, I was pre-med, and I stayed pre-med for four years. But at the end of the first year, I switched to film, and in doing film, I got to do a lot of it. I learned that you can't make films by yourself. That was a revelation. It was a great revelation because quality improved quite dramatically after that one. And then I learned that if you work with other people, you don't have to necessarily direct it.
Surprise there for every freshman in film school. You don't have to direct everything you do.
Yeah, no,
Luckily.
exactly. And it so I tried directing and producing on the last movie, the last short film I made as a student, Zindagi. And I just enjoyed producing considerably more than directing. And yeah, I like producing.
What are some things that you feel like are essential for a producer to know or to have in order to be a good producer?
You just need to have a willingness to take action. Usually, for people that don't know what a producer is, I kind of explain it. The director is kind of like the painter while the producer is the one that gives the director the palette, right? In most cases, everyone knows what they need to do. Everyone likes talking about what they should do, but actually doing it is hard because it means overcoming insecurities that we all face at certain levels. And it's just like saying, you know, I'm going to do it today.
So basically be like Nike, just do it.
Just do it. Sponsor us. I heard in the end credits, we don't have, your podcast doesn't have a sponsor yet. So Nike, if you're listening, please.
Thanks for the plug, dude. No, but okay. So based on your own career and your own experiences, like what would you say really helped you become the filmmaker you are today?
I guess it would be two main things. The first one I just said, which is just do it. It's really easy to start a company. I graduated on May 12th. I started my company on May 15th. In the US, you just have to pay a little bit of money and then you have a company. And then the second part of it is surround yourself with people that you can work with and that have similar levels of ambition.
Yeah. I mean, but look at the company now, like 2 years later, it was only 2 years, right? And then you ended up producing a $25,000 feature film.
Yeah. When we got the funding for the feature film, Santistein, that was at like 2 years and 3 months in. I think part of it is like preparation. Part of it is big. Part of it is also kind of like luck and chance and that type of stuff. You just need to keep working and you need to keep understanding that, okay, we want to be the next Steven Spielberg or Alejandro Iñárritu or whoever's cool right now. Oh, Bong Joon-ho, right? We all want to be cool and respected and just make stories that like really
matter.
Yes, to people and really impact people. The same way as the movies that we love have touched us, right? Like when I was a kid, I loved Star Wars. And what was Star Wars? It was a movie, right? And somehow it just seeped through my life. And just, I've watched movies that have had just pronounced effects. Like I just watched them at the right time. Like I watched Spectacular Now in 2016 and that's what I needed. And I think here, let me talk about one of the themes from that movie right now, because I think it plays, right? And it's the thing that you kind of do in film school that I think you executed really well, Fernanda. And I don't know you as well, Catherine, so I can't say, but it's the movie thematically is about it's about living in the moment versus planning for the future. And at all times of this journey that we have no idea what the next step is, you kind of make those choices along the way, like being there in the moment and embracing every opportunity is also good. It's about that balance. The whole thing is like there's no clearly defined path to getting there. It's a continuous succession of pivots. Because on one side, it's like, what do I believe will bring me success? And on the other side, it's like, what am I doing that makes me happy?
I mean, you touched on something really interesting. The whole difference between like what you want to do as a filmmaker and then what you will get paid for, right, are two different things. So how does one deal with that, right? Because you want to wake up and make feature films all day, right? But that's just simply unrealistic.
Because it's a combination of both. Because the only time I can work over 12 hours a day is if I'm really enjoying what I'm doing.
I guess one question I had is like the difference, because this is like things film school doesn't teach us, is like teachers and people are like, oh, just start your own company, just register it. But I think a lot of students, especially like younger undergrads, don't understand that, yeah, you can start your company, but then there's like the taxes, like all this other paperwork involved with it that, again, film school doesn't tell us about.
Right.
I guess if you want to elaborate a little bit on that, talk about what it really means to start your own production company, not just signing off a business and putting a name on it.
We can handle the truth here, what she's saying.
Then I'll rain down the truth from the heavens of the gates of truth. I don't know. But yeah, you brought up a good point, right? Which is something I should have mentioned, but it is easy to start a company, but it's not the right move for everyone, right? the path that I am still on, still navigating it, just like both of you are, and I'm sure a ton of other people are as well, can be taken many different ways, right? You can start your own company, or for other people, working at someone else's company and learning how they do it makes more sense. But yeah, there are benefits to starting your own company as you make a lot of mistakes. I personally learn a lot more from making mistakes. It just depends on who you are as a person. There are hardships with it because you don't really make a lot of money. Because as you kind of mentioned, there is a difference between what you enjoy making and what you sometimes have to make.
Yeah.
And usually the thing that you enjoy making, you don't really make as much money from it, right?
It's just hard because a passion project is different from like something that a client wants. Because for a client work, someone's already looking for it, right? The other one, it's almost like you're offering your opinion to the world and, you know.
Yeah, it's just, it requires more of a push, right? Because for a client, you just make the video and that's it, right? If you yes. make something for yourself, right? What do you have to do now? You have to market it. You have to create something around it to make people want to watch it. You have to find the people and convince them to watch or listen to it, right? You have to make videos on TikTok. Sometimes that works for some people. Instagram ads, you know, you just have to put in the time and effort. But yeah, I make it sound like it's easy, but it's not. Because if it was easy, then
everybody would be doing it.
Yeah, you just have to get your name out there, which actually, let's get back to that point, because I think that one's extremely important. And like, I didn't know about it until I graduated, which was a shame. But for anybody that's still in school and is listening, the importance of marketing your own stuff and marketing your own film. So what she was kind of talking about before, the difference between client and your own stuff, right, is that you have to push for it. So what do you mean by that?
Like, so I can tell you what we do. We always make a trailer. We always make a poster. We always try and post as much as we can. The one that I had the most success marketing, because I felt like everyone knew about it, was Zindagi. So we just try and create like a hype train around it, you know? Because sometimes we get down about things and we compare ourselves with other people and we're like, you know, XYZ Film Festival doesn't matter because it's not Cannes Film Festival. Who cares? Nobody knows that on your followers list.
Exactly.
Always post about it. It's like people are so afraid of sharing their stuff. So it's about making it accessible and making it like really public. I was at a seminar one time. Seminars have such a cringy connotation, but I was at a free seminar about marketing, and they said, you know, the person kind of has to see it 7 times before they actually do anything. And I think that holds true with like social media and stuff like that.
No, for sure. And that's the thing, like, I feel like they just, at least for me, they never taught me at school, because it was like, they taught you how to make the movie, but never, like, once you had it done, you're like, okay, what do I do with it? You know, like, you never really knew what was up. And to me, like, some people are just afraid of people telling them that it's bad or it doesn't look good. And like, honestly, truly, it probably is bad and it probably doesn't look good, but it's part of the process, and you need that feedback and that criticism in order to grow. And I feel like some people are so scared of trying to do things, knowing that they're not going to be the best at it, that they never kind of move on, you know, they kind of never develop the skills that you need, right? And that also goes for like film festivals, which is a very, okay, we can talk about that all day, but film festivals, submit anything you have to them. If there's literally a list, actually, that you will absolutely get official selection to. So like, if you want a Laurel, you can get them. And there's obviously a hierarchy, right? There's so many online ones and there's so many new ones that anybody can have a Laurel on their poster at this point, right? So it becomes a little bit of like knowing where to market and where to submit your film to kind of like cater to what you think will have success. Like for me in particular, I looked up certain film festivals that I knew were looking for the type of film that I was making. And that really helped with the success of the actual like performance, like getting official selection and moving up. Because again, you were aligning yourself to what they were looking for versus just kind of just throwing everything out there and wasting $500, $600 on festivals that didn't come through, you know? So it's a lot of research and a lot of marketing, but that's how you get your name out there, and that's how you get other people to notice what you're doing.
Yes.
You need to really understand what film festivals want, right? Because it is readily available on their website. It just takes an extra 5 minutes. And then on top of that, you also need to understand what people are watching and where they're watching it, right?
Exactly.
Which is why we made the TikTok series.
But that's so smart, though. Because, like, you know, Damien Chazelle, actually, a shout out to Cesar, one of our friends. He sent me this link today. Damien Chazelle made a short film in a 9x16 ratio, like in an iPhone ratio, shot with an iPhone. So it's vertical. And that, to me, is insane. And then I was like, I need to tell what she says, because he's making an entire web series with a vertical aspect ratio. So it's innovating, you know?
Thanks, Damien Chazelle. I guess we'll just say you did it first, okay? But yeah, no, it's great. It's so much fun because we get to try a new format and on a new platform that has organic reach, which means that you post on there and if people actually like it, then more people will see it, which is something people didn't have 50 years ago. And it's also something that you don't get as much on Instagram and Facebook, where you have to kind of pay to play. And it's also like a fascinating feedback loop, right? Because
what do you mean?
We're going to devise some ways to kind of get it in front of people's eyes. You know, we're not just going to sit around and see what TikTok does with it, what TikTok's algorithm does with it. But we'll play around with the hashtags. And it's going to be fascinating because on a level, besides some extraneous variables, like we get to see real talk, like, who likes this?
No, yeah. And that goes back to the whole criticism thing even. Like, that's even a learning experience, right? Because sometimes what you cater to is not necessarily what people, like, you know? And it's just a way of thinking about, you know, putting content out there and not really knowing who wants it or who needs it, but then finding someone that, like, a niche that, like, understands what you're doing and appreciates what you're doing, and then figuring out also how to create more content for them, right? How to cater to them and what they want. So it takes a lot of, like, guts to be like, okay, we're going to do something, we're going to put it out into the world and see what happens. You know, it takes a certain type of character, which I feel like as a filmmaker, you need thick skin to kind of make it.
I think we've seen that, like, through our own experience in film school. Like, there's always those certain groups of people that can, you know, they enjoy sharing, they enjoy collaborating. And then there's certain type of people that always try to keep it closed in.
Yeah. Like those people that have all their films on a private link on Vimeo.
Exactly.
Those people. I hope I'm not calling out either of you two. But
we have no idea what you're talking about.
But, I mean, I don't think anyone makes movies to put it on private, right?
Yeah, but that seems to be the thing that happens with film school students. They make it. Someone says one thing bad about it, and then they put it on private. Which, I mean, their intention might not have been in the beginning to put it on private, but I guess what you were mentioning is, like, that resilience, like, who cares? People watch bad movies.
Exactly.
What's it called?
The Room?
Yes. I love that movie.
It just came out from some guy that wanted to make a movie, and there was literally no one that could stop him. Like, that's the kind of mentality. Also, Robert Rodriguez, right? He wrote the book, Rebel Without a Crew, which I recommend to everybody. That's literally my graduation gift to everybody from film school, that book. Because it's so essential.
He made a movie with just $7,000, right?
Yeah, like, so he's honestly one of the people that I consider a genius in this industry, because you don't get anywhere if you don't have, like, the motivation and the guts to be like, you know what, I don't have anything and I don't need anything, because this is what I want to do and I'm just going to figure out whatever way possible to do it. That, to me, are the people that are successful in film. Not the ones that are kind of waiting around for someone to share a contact and give them the $25 million that they need to make their 30-second advertisement, you know? it's not going to happen.
100% agreed with that. You got to, again, it differs for everyone, right? But, like, on this path of producing, I don't think you could work up a hierarchy to get to a producer. You'd have to really know someone. And then introduce them to me. if you don't know someone, then it really is about just taking every opportunity by the horns and doing whatever you can with it.
Any pointers on the idea of networking? Like, where should you network? How should you network?
So it's about networking combined with that work ethic, right? I used to network 4 times a week and I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of driving, but there are a ton of networking events in Miami and in cities. You just have to go and find them. Like, you just need to meet people. You need to work on other people's sets. You need to go above and beyond. You need to do
just do it.
Yeah, do a lot.
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit like on that with Kami too. It's that combination. Like, yeah, you want someone who's good, but do you want someone who's an asshole or someone, you know, who's going to treat you well at the same time as being good?
You have to work with people you trust. Like, to me, the most successful sets, and that includes Santa Stein, and that includes Caminos, and that includes basically every set that I've decided to go on, is with people that I know will have my back and will show up on set. Because it doesn't matter if you have $1 million, like, if you don't trust the person there, and if they're not reliable, then nothing's gonna work right. You're gonna run into so many issues. It's just not gonna happen.
For me, I just communicate so much with potential clients. So I was networking so much in the past, more for money. So for a year there, my company made the most money through networking. It's very old school way of making money. Usually social media ads will get you a far bigger reach, but yeah, I would go to a ton of those, and it would be a lot of talking. Like, I really need to understand what they want, right? I always ask two main questions, which is, who's your audience and what is the goal of this video? And based on those two questions, it helps us make the right thing.
Right. Which goes back also to something that you mentioned, like, basically the first time I ever worked with you, you were like, the most important thing about selling any video deliverable is the idea of value, like making the client understand the value of what you're providing, right?
A lot of people tend to charge their services based on time. And I think time is a good metric to maybe break down the budget, which is what we usually do. That way it's quantifiable why something costs as much as it does. And it doesn't sound like we're making up a number. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if you can always get that one kid off Instagram to do it for $75. But you never want to compete on price. Then you're in the wrong market. You're in the budget market. And you can't survive in the United States of America, right? Video is a big thing that people don't realize how big it is. Surprisingly, everyone thinks that
even though they consume so much of it.
Yeah, everyone thinks that a 2-minute video took 2 minutes to make.
That's also a producing thing, which is what I thought you were going to say when I asked you, what does a producer need to have to be a good producer? This is something I actually learned from you, which is ironic that you didn't say it. But it's like, it's to be able to handle that balance between, listen, I'm in charge, I know what we have to do, and you have to do it now, because if not, we're going to lose the budget. But at the same time, be like, have that, you know, ability to say it nicely, you know. But good producers are able to just stay calm and just be like, listen, okay, here's what we're gonna do, and this is how we're gonna do it, without the other person getting offended, which is really hard, I think, to do correctly.
Well, I'm glad I was the one that said that to you, because I agree with that 100%. Joel had this philosophy where it was, if a problem comes up, we're not gonna just tell the client about the problem. We're going to tell the client about the problem and have a solution for it. Why are they paying you if you're not there to solve the problem? You want to be on the quality side, on the luxury side. I mean, we are also on the privileged side. We're in the most privileged industry to be in. Thank you, parents, for struggling. Greatly appreciated.
The immigrant life.
Yeah, the immigrant life.
But it's true. Like, that's also, it also goes back to what you said about doing things that matter, right? The fact that we have the chance, like, I'd have never in a million years had you told me that I was gonna, you know, be on set for this many days and just learn so much stuff. To me, it's literally a blessing, because I'm just like, the amount of things that have to click in order for me to be standing here holding an Apple box, just like complaining about the boom being in my shot, you know, like, is insane. You know, like, not everybody gets to do this. And also, it's also what you do with it, right? The movies that you create, the messages that you decide to send, I feel like are intrinsically tied to your ability to even, you know, think about making these things. And at least for me, you know, that's a very personal kind of thing about movie making.
Absolutely agreed.
I agree with you. Like, I've had those conversations with, like, family and friends, and they're like, why? Or, like, how did you choose that? And it really is just, like, a leap of faith. You just have to take the chance.
Thank you so much, Wishies, for coming on the podcast. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for, you know, shedding some light on stuff that you don't necessarily run into during your classes in film school or your lectures. So
Absolutely. I'm really happy that I was on this. I'm an avid listener, so it's going to be great to hear myself talk, because that's my second favorite thing to do after talking about myself. So thank you.
No problem. And social media. So social media is, you want people to follow your company, your podcast, your TikTok series, et cetera, et cetera.
So yes, watch my TikTok series, Strux, which I created with a bunch of lovely people, including Fernanda. Fernanda's working on that as well. That will be on at UNS Productions on TikTok. It'll probably be on other social media as well, because, you know, got to put it everywhere. And then also watch my podcast, listen to my podcast, that is correct. Also created with a bunch of lovely people. It's called ARCS Podcast. We share stories that we write, so it's different from yours. We don't intersect, you know, got to split up the market. But we share stories. Some of them are episodic. Some of them are one-offs. All of them are fun. Or they make you cry.
Perfect. That's. I feel like if everybody's listening, everybody's going to go listen to it now at this point after that disclaimer about them, you know, crying.
Yeah.
Again, thank you, Washif, for coming on. A lot of fun. You can find us, Red Pill, Blue Pill Podcasts, on Instagram, RPBP Podcasts, Anchor, Google, Apple, everywhere. And we hope to catch you on the next episode.
This podcast is brought to you by no one. Are your Chipotle, please sponsor us before someone else does. Voiced by your hosts, Catherine Mairena and Fernanda Lamuña. Special guest appearance by Washif Sukul. Original music by Alec Dreith and Sadine Dasum. Graphic design by Natalie Mairena. Copyright 2020 RPBP Podcast.